comes the, here comes the, here comes the.
Y'all don't really want it like that.
Yeah. Here comes the, no. Here comes the, oh. Here comes the.
Really, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. This is the Gridiron Experts Dynasty Podcast. It has been a while. I am your host, Jared Forrest. You can find me on Twitter at the Dynasty Owl. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Leopold. You can find him on Twitter at Leopold NFL. Mark, I don't know how long it's been. It's been a few months, I think, since we've been able to get together, do this. We've had real life come up.
Too low.
We've had real life come up, and but now we're getting into it with rookie drafts going, with camp reporting yesterday and today, and injuries and news. Feels good to be back. What's going on?
Oh, man, just happy to have football coming back. I know most folks are probably focused on the seasonal leagues. Most of my rookie drafts are early on, you know, early May, right after the NFL draft. But as you pointed out, there are definitely still a good chunk of leagues that do their rookie drafts, even all the way up through towards the end of preseason. So still a lot of good content to cover from a dynasty perspective. Obviously, lots of information that we can glean from training camps and what these guys are doing, you know, how they're lining up in different formations, who's running with the ones versus the twos, that kind of thing. So lots of good nuggets, not only for the rookies, but also for some of the veterans, especially those guys who have changed teams or are in a new situation if their team has acquired players in their position group via free agency or the draft. So lots going on, and we're less than a week away from the first football game, so that is a plus.
That's great. I cannot wait. Preseason is still exciting to watch regardless of the talent that's on the field, but as you alluded to, a lot of rookie drafts are done. Typically, my home league, the league that I tweet about most often and I run, we have our rookie draft on Labor Day weekend. We kind of make a big weekend out of it, but this year we had to do it early. So we actually did it last week, so we'll have some fresh ADP from my home league. But for the episode today, we're going to do a quick two-round little rookie mock. But first, we're going to get into some camp news and notes. And there's always a lot. And we're not going to harp on Devontae Parker having a big camp or Daniel Jones hitting a running back for a screen. Hey, I've been holding Parker since that rookie draft. You know, when if you drafted him, you've never had the opportunity to really sell high, because I think that you've always been kind of just waiting for him to bust out. And as long as you didn't want to sell low or release him, you're probably still holding him like I am in several leagues. So I'm hoping that a new regime there with Ryan Fitzpatrick, who likes to air it out, I'm hoping to at least get some value there so I could just trade him away and be done with it. But I do think that as long as he stays on the field and stays healthy, that he could have something. With that being said, we're not going to harp on the stupid news blurbs that everybody tweets. Yeah,
everyone looks good in a t-shirt and shorts.
Without
the pads.
I'm so tired. I see another Dante Pettis route running around a garbage can video, I'm going to lose my mind. I like Dante Pettis as much as the next guy, but stop it. So we're just going to go. Going to touch on some of the holdouts. I think there are some big names on there. We expect most of them to report, but obviously not. There was a little blurb that came out today regarding the Packers wide receiving core, and then a couple of key injuries. So we'll start with the holdouts just because those are the biggest names. And obviously we have Melvin Gordon, which is going to headline this list because he's the one that is most in doubt, I believe, of reporting. And then Zeke did not show up to training camp today for the Cowboys. And Michael Thomas is also holding out for a contract extension. As far as I'm concerned, those are the three biggest names. With Melvin Gordon being the biggest one, I'm a Justin Jackson fan. I know a lot of people are Austin Eckler fanboys. And then there's a third group that just thinks that Melvin Gordon's going to report and he's not going to pull a Le'Veon Bell like he did last year. Mark, where do you stand on him?
So Melvin Gordon, I think it's a different situation than Le'Veon Bell, and I've seen a lot of different takes about this, but really the biggest difference is that Bell was on the franchise tag, And so he could hold out the whole year and then become an unrestricted free agent. Yep. Melvin Gordon doesn't have that luxury, unfortunately, because he's still on his rookie contract. So he has to get what's called an accrued year. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't play, at least there's not actually a set number, but the rule of thumb that I've seen probably is the most accurate is about half the season. And that's based on what Joey Galloway did back in the day. That was accepted. He came in, I think, week 9 it was, and he got his accrued year. So it's getting more and more likely, I think, that Melvin Gordon will miss some time. But from his perspective, it makes no sense to hold out the whole season because ultimately a year from now he'll be right back where he is now. He'll still be on contract 1 year left with the Chargers, and he'll be a year older. So he's certainly not doing himself any favor in the free agent market if he tries to do that. So I really doubt we'll see him hold out past about the mid-season point, but it's definitely risky that he'll miss time. And so I think it's a big-time gamble if you have him on your fantasy roster, if you're drafting him early in best ball leagues. So I'm not feeling good about the situation if I have Melvin Gordon at this point. I know a lot of people in the Scott Fishbowl took him the middle of the first round or so. So it's definitely a bad situation, and I'm seeing a lot of Justin Jackson takes, and as much as I love the guy and he had a great college profile, we saw Melvin Gordon miss time last year, and it was a committee significantly leaning towards Austin Eckler. So he is definitely the guy you want, and Jackson can still have some value in that case, but it's really Austin Eckler's backfield.
Yeah, and we see blurbs today that Austin Eckler's getting first-team reps, so it's really not a surprise.
No surprise.
Yeah, but I'm glad you brought up the whole contract and the difference between Le'Veon Bell and this, which is why the comparison needs to stop, because it's not the same. And I believe it was someone tweeted out that he needs to report by week 8. But regardless, yeah, you're right. It's somewhere in the middle of the season. Otherwise, he's just going to be a Charger next year. And he really doesn't have too much ammo here like Le'Veon did with the Steelers. Sure, the Chargers can trade him. I don't think that's going to happen either. They have a decent amount of cap space. I personally think that they're going to work on an extension. They're going to re-sign him. I don't think that he's necessarily worth what he's going to get, but that's the whole running back case. I am one of those teams that drafted him in the middle of the first round in the Scott Fishbowl, so I'm not too happy with this, considering the news of his holdout came exactly 2 days after I drafted him. Did get Austin Eckler later in that draft, though, so it's okay, I guess. Not too excited about it, considering my top running backs are Gurley and Austin Eckler now. So it's a tough situation, but yeah, I mean, it's just one that you got to monitor closely. I think that they're going to re-sign him before the season starts, I hope.
I'm on the other end of that.
Yeah.
I think they have no incentive whatsoever to cave, because from their perspective, they're in basically about the same spot if they have Eckler and Jackson as they are to have Gordon.
See, I think that is a fantasy aspect looking at it, because we know running backs don't matter. I think with a professional football team, they are looking at that as a whole, saying, how many more years do we have of Phillip Rivers? We need to make a run, you know, as soon as we can before he hangs it up. And perhaps Melvin Gordon is the best running back to give us that opportunity to make that run. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not in the front office of a professional football team. I'm just imagining that that's what's going through their mind, and that's what goes through the minds of most teams when they sign any running backs to longer-term deals. We'll see.
Yeah, football teams do things that don't make sense all the time, so it's certainly possible that they pay him. I just don't think it makes sense from where they are as a team, where else they could spend their money, and Melvin Gordon's long-term outlook and how much he gives you above replacement. It just doesn't make sense in my mind for the Chargers to cave on this, because they have so much more leverage than he does.
Oh, I completely agree. He has absolutely no leverage when it comes to this. It's not like the Le'Veon situation. So we'll see how it plays out. That's right. Why I think that he ends up reporting is because of how different it is from the Le'Veon situation. But
I think I think he'll show up, because I think his agent is going to have to be telling him all these things, but I don't necessarily think he'll show up week 1 or even, you know, preseason. So I'm definitely concerned.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, it it might make you look like a genius then if you drafted him and he shows up week 8 with those fresh legs, and now you have a fresh running back for the playoff push. But
that's if you're not 0-7.
Exactly. That's not something I want to count on, nor is it anything that you should be kind of assuming will happen. Other holdouts include Zeke and Michael Thomas. I don't know if you fall in the same category as me. I completely expect both these teams to figure this out. The Cowboys have been talking all offseason how they want to re-sign their big three. In fact, Jerry Jones came out and said today that they're working on a deal for Amari Cooper. And Michael Thomas is going to be re-signed any day now, make him the highest paid receiver in the league. That's no question. Is there anything worth noting about either of these?
No, Thomas will definitely get paid. I mean, you look at New Orleans, and they actually don't have that many weapons on offense, I think, contrary to popular belief. It's pretty much Thomas and Alvin Kamara. You can say Jared Cook's there now, which is great, but they don't have a firmly established number two receiver. They don't have a firmly established number three receiver. They're riding an old Latavius Murray at this point as their second running back, and that's probably going to be fine. But if you don't have Michael Thomas, that offense is really just Alvin Kamara that's the reliable playmaker there. So you really need Thomas, one of the better receivers in the game. I think it makes perfect sense to pay him. He's a valuable position. You know, we're not talking about a running back or a kicker or something like that. So it makes sense to pay him. I think they should, and I'm sure it'll get done.
Yeah, one of the top wide receivers in the league. Yeah. And you mentioned it. Their wide receiver depth chart is, you know, Ted Ginn, who is just a deep threat. And then Cameron Meredith, who some are predicting for a little bit of a bounce back year after the injury.
And I really like Cameron Meredith. I also really like Tre'Quan Smith. I think they have a lot of upside players.
Absolutely. I love Tre'Quan Smith. He could play that outside. I think he's going to end up playing that outside over Ted Ginn.
Yeah, and then same way the Chargers are running out the clock on Rivers. Breeze's time is running out as well. Exactly. So for New Orleans, you look at their situation, it pretty much has to be this year, maybe next year. So they need to get it done.
Yeah, and I'm sure they will. Same thing with Zeke. That is a little bit more of a complicated situation, only because they have the three big players coming up for contract extension soon, plus the offensive line. So that one, I mean, they're going to re-sign him. It's just a matter of when and how much and if they're going to be able to re-sign Dak and Amari after that. But, again, just something to monitor.
Go ahead. The Cowboys, I agree. I think they'll probably end up paying him, but I don't think it's quite as clear cut as a lot of people are making it out to be, because the Cowboys have a lot of pending free agents in 2020. So they're coming up on contract years for Dak and Amari Cooper that we've mentioned. But you also have Sean Lee going into a contract year then, Robert Quinn going into a contract year then. Byron Jones, who played very well last year, going into a contract year. So a couple of those guys could demand sort of moderate contracts. I think Byron Jones, Lael Collins as well. So you could get some decent money for a couple of those guys. Obviously, Sean Lee's older. But, you know, we're not talking about a team that is well set across the board except Zeke and Dak and Amari. So they've got some other pieces of the puzzle they need to figure out. Would I be ultimately shocked if they go another direction? No, not really. But, you know, Zeke is sort of one of the faces of the franchise, and owners think about things like jersey sales and all that. So I kind of expect them to pay him regardless.
Especially that owner.
Ultimately, if you're looking at it sort of analytically, it might make sense not to, depending on how they feel about some of these guys. But, you know, some of those other names are, I think, relatively important players. So.
No, I agree. And, you know, you mentioned it, face of the franchise. And while I think it's a mistake, I think that they re-signed Dak and Zeke before they re-signed Amari. I think if you're only re-signing two out of three, I think Cooper's the odd man out there, which is unfortunate because I think Dak and Amari could have something special there. And obviously running backs don't matter, even though Zeke is obviously one of the top three, if not the best running back in the league. So definitely something to monitor, if not just for this year, over the next year or two. As far as injuries over camp go, so far it hasn't – I mean, we say it hasn't been too bad. It's been 2 days of camp and there's been two injuries. But Sterling Shepard fractured his thumb yesterday, and immediately after that, Corey Coleman tore his ACL. Now, Corey Coleman wasn't really on anybody's dynasty radar if you wanted to get some clicks on an article and maybe said he was going to have a bounce-back year. Maybe you said that, but Sterling Shepard certainly was. People were looking at him as the top – target for that Giants offense, maybe with Evan Engram, maybe with Golden Tate. But reports are he's probably still going to be back in time for the opening day. Corey Coleman's obviously out for the year, and they're bringing in Fat Kelvin Benjamin for a workout. Do you take anything from this? I don't. This is an offense that, other than Saquon, I was staying very, very clear from.
Yeah, I'm generally trying to avoid the offense as well. Even Saquon at 101, I'm kind of indifferent about. You know, I can definitely see the case for McCaffrey. I can see the case for Zeke as long as we know he's there. So I'm just kind of trying to avoid the offense altogether, with the exception of, you know, if Evan Engram or Sterling Shepard falls well below ADP. But Shepard, I'm not generally worried about him as far as actually kind of being on the field and producing, because the Giants wide receiver depth chart is one of the worst in the league. It's just completely barren. So the only people catching passes that we can say for sure are going to be Shepard, Engram, and Barkley. So I'm not worried about that. Corey Coleman should really be owned anywhere at this point.
No,
I'm not worried about Shepard because there's really no competition for targets at the wide receiver position. So he should be healthy at or near the beginning of the season. It's a broken bone. Those generally heal without any problems or risk for re-injury. It's not a soft tissue injury, so I'm not concerned about that. So no real worries for Shepard.
Yeah, and he was even running routes today still and catching balls with a non-broken hand. So I think he'll be there for the season opener. I think they need him to.
Yeah, I'm not worried.
The game script is certainly going to be in favor of the wide receivers because the Giants are going to be trailing a lot. But we'll see. Again, it's an offense that I'm not really concerned myself with. I don't have Saquon anywhere. I have Engram in a couple of places, but nothing crazy. And then the final camp blurb that I wanted to touch on. Aaron Rodgers had a little quote earlier this week, and then Ryan Wood of the beat writer for the Packers said that MVS, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, is way ahead of not just Geronimo Allison, but Equanimeous St. Brown as well, as starting on the outside opposite Devontae Adams. I know this was kind of up in the air as far as who was going to be that number two behind Devontae Adams. I don't think a lot of people thought that Equanimeous St. Brown was going to be that person, but regardless, to see Marquez Valdez-Scantling kind of stand out. I know you've been talking about him since last year as someone that you liked. Is this someone that you imagine was going to start opposite Adams regardless? And where do you take this blurb? Is it big for you?
It's kind of what we expected, I think. So yeah. I don't think there's too much here. But, you know, at the end of last season, it sure looked like MVS would probably be the lead candidate to start on the outside opposite Adams. And that's obviously a valuable role. We saw it produce in stretches last year. So, yeah, he's a guy that's, you know, definitely interesting. Geronimo Allison, yeah, I think we should have expected him to be on the field. I don't think this comes as a surprise. But I think if you're projecting targets, he should be comfortably behind MVS. So are we really that interested? Probably not. You know, I don't ever really see him being a reliable starting asset. And I think that's one thing that's just generally overlooked by fantasy football players, dynasty redraft. If there's a guy on your bench like a Geronimo Allison, and he doesn't have a chance to become a weekly reliable starter, there's no point in owning that type of player. You know, there's no point in owning a Theo Riddick. You want to have players like a Hakeem Butler, for example. You could see a case where he becomes an every week reliable starting fantasy football asset. And it might be unlikely, but he's going way behind Geronimo in seasonal drafts, I would imagine. And depending on how people view the offense, I think he might be cheaper than both of them in Dynasty. Although I know there's some Hakeem Butler stands, so that might not be the case. But you want to load up your bench with those type of guys that have the potential to be weekly reliable starters. I see the case for that for MVS, so I'm interested. I don't see the case for that for Geronimo.
Yeah, I mean, we've been on MVS since last year, and he was...
Yeah, and I was on Jamon Moore because of the same thing, right? Yeah, it was either MVS or Jamon Moore in my mind, because they're freak athletes.
And you got the Jake Kumerow crowd as well. So there's... it's going to be a wait and see to see who comes out of that positional battle. Regardless, it's going to be one that, you know, you want a piece of, because it's going to be a pass-heavy team. Devontae Adams is going to get a lot of coverage. Regardless, he's still going to finish as a top five wide receiver most likely. But you want to get a piece of that second wide receiver in those high-velocity offenses. Same thing with, like, Indianapolis. And I know that wasn't on our show sheet, but it's similar. Who's going to be the guy after T.Y. Hilton? Is it going to be Paris Campbell? Or Deion Kane is having a great year? Or is Devin Funchess going to be that guy? So with these offenses, you always want to try and get that guy who's going to be opposite of the X. For this instance, it looks like it's going to be MVS. So it's going to definitely return some value on his ADP. So congrats if you drafted him as late as he was going. We'll see. You know, he's got to stay healthy and, you know, kind of carve out his own role. But as far as camp goes, you got any other news blurbs or headlines that you want to touch on, or you want to get into this mock?
No, I don't think we've seen too much of interest yet. I mean, again, most of these things should be taken pretty lightly. So nothing has really been groundbreaking that I've seen.
No. Yeah. And obviously, if we get back to the weekly shows, we'll have little blurbs and everything that we want to touch on. So we'll see. These murky gray areas will start to clear themselves out and become more black and white as far as who's exceeding and who's meeting expectations. So we'll keep an eye on everything. We'll bring it to you. But we'll get into this mock. We decided to do two rounds instead of three or four, and even that was a struggle. This draft class was not good. For me, there's a clear tier as far as one through four. Maybe you could even make a tier of like 1A and 1B of those four. But after the top four, I think it really fell off. And then everything from just 1.5 to 204, which is just, it was just
right there.
You know, I had two first round picks in my home league. I traded the 108 away for 2021st next year. And with the 112, I ended up taking Deebo Samuel. So I'm happy with it. I wish I could have gotten another 2021st, but it's whatever. So I was lucky enough to get the 101 in our mock, and it's pretty much consensus. Maybe you can make the case for a wide receiver, but I took Josh Jacobs. Just an opportunity, really, alone. I know John Gruden came out and said today that he needs to earn his spot, but let's be real, it's his spot. I think landing spot played a key role here. I think that as an athlete, he was not that great in Alabama. Granted, he never really had the backfield alone, but I didn't think he was a first-round draft pick in the NFL draft. I don't know if he's going to end up being that good in the NFL, but I think he's worth the 101 here just based on opportunity alone.
Yeah, I've kind of come around to it. You know, I've been all aboard the Miles Sanders train all offseason, but we're definitely at the point, given the hamstring injury, the talk of committee, you know, his pass blocking struggles, that give me some concerns that Sanders won't be on the field as early as I was hoping.
Yeah.
But just the reason being that Sanders, we have a much more complete profile. You know, we know his athleticism across the board is above the 75th percentile. We know he was productive in college in the running game and the passing game, and that he was a late breakout due to being behind Saquon Barkley. So it's a very complete profile. It checks pretty much all the boxes. Jacobs is just much more of that black box prospect. You know, we saw him at Alabama. He played in one of the country's best offenses. He looked good on tape. But Ronald Jones also looked good on tape, according to the film grinders.
Yeah, no kidding.
So without some of the athleticism numbers, those are things I'd really like to have. I would have liked to see more production in the passing game. And I'm not that big of a fan of the landing spot. So Jacobs is – I think you got to go with him at the 101 at this point. So I think the pick is fine. But just relative to any other year in recent memory, such a weak 101.
Poor.
Last year, you know, you're probably talking Jacobs – mid-first, maybe. A couple years ago, you know, mid-first. He's probably only really near the top in the Leonard Fournette, Corey Davis year. And even then, you could start making the case for Dalvin Cook, Joe Mixon, Christian McCaffrey over him. So he could have even been a mid-first then.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the only year that you're really looking at him even touching the top three, let alone the 101. So, yeah, that goes to show you just the entirety of the weakness of this draft class. But you had the 102, and you touched on another running back. Is that who you're going with at 102?
Yeah, the 102 for me is Miles Sanders. That's still an easy decision. And the crazy part is, based on pretty much just the hamstring injury alone and the pass blocking comments from camp, I've seen some drafts where he's going almost, you know, late first, 108, 109 range, and that's just absolutely crazy to me. Yeah, he's still the clear 102. Like I said, the complete profile, speed score, burst score, agility score, all above the 75th percentile. Total package as far as rushing and receiving production in college, we can understand a late breakout because Saquon Barkley was there until Sanders' final season. Second-round pick to the Eagles, a team who generally subscribes to analytics and you wouldn't think would spend a high-round draft pick on a running back. And a lot of concern about him going to the Eagles specifically because they use a committee. But the obvious cause and effect there could be that they've never had a running back even close to the talent level of Miles Sanders. I mean, Doug Peterson there's been trotting out. Jay Ajayi is probably the best running back. Wendell Smallwood, Josh Adams, Corey Clement. So,
Darren Sproles.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen a guy like Sanders. So certainly possible that he ends up walking away with the vast majority of the touches. It's a very strong offense. And like I kind of mentioned earlier, I want guys that have the potential to be every week plug and plays. Sanders absolutely checks that box.
So Miles Sanders or Damian Williams?
This year or Dynasty?
Dynasty.
Sanders.
Interesting. Okay. Miles Sanders or Tevin Coleman?
Oh, Sanders easily.
Okay.
That one's not even close.
Yeah, no, it's not. I'm going.
Williams is closer.
Yeah. See, I would pick Williams over Sanders. I'm going up a little bit as far as ADP goes. Devontae Freeman or Miles Sanders. I'm surprised.
Sanders.
Yeah, I agree with that. I know you're not. Are you big on Derrick Henry?
This season.
Okay, so there you go. Derrick Henry or Miles Sanders, Dynasty.
That's tough. Because Henry could legitimately – go close to 2,000 rushing yards this year, even
really
if he doesn't catch passes.
Yeah.
So the championship alone that he might bring you this year is worth several years of Miles Sanders. So sure. It's close. I'm just not going
to
make a pick.
Yeah, and just to give you a look, Derrick Henry's currently going as a running back 20, while Miles Sanders is running back 27.
I think Sanders back end RB2 in Dynasty. I think that's about right.
Yeah, so that's gives you some good value there if he ends up, you know, busting out of that committee. It'll be interesting to see what they do there in Philly. It's hard to project that. Like you said, they've never really had the talent of a Miles Sanders. So we'll see what they do there.
Yeah, the biggest concern I'm hearing is Jordan Howard, but they gave up, what was it, a fifth or a sixth? I don't even remember. But basically nothing to get him. So it was just an insurance policy. Obviously, that was before the draft, so they didn't know how it was going to go. So get out of here with Jordan Howard.
Yeah, no, I'm not even considering him a threat as far as Miles Sanders' job is concerned. With the 103, I took the first receiver off the board with N'Keal Harry. And many people had N'Keal Harry as the top receiver in this draft class.
Yeah, easily.
But then when he had the draft, you know, when he gets drafted by the Patriots, and then they had the offseason that they did with Gronk and I guess Cordarrelle Patterson and Chris Hogan, and we don't know what's going on with Josh Gordon yet. What there's Philip Dorsett there, and there's Edelman, who is nursing a broken thumb as well, I think. There's Dontrell Inman. Demaryius Thomas probably isn't going to play this year.
Don't forget Danny Etling.
Yeah, Danny Etling. Braxton Berrios, I know the Dynasty community has a thing for. So N'Keal Harry goes right into that X role, assuming Josh Gordon doesn't come back, right into that X role.
Should be.
He's probably – he may not lead the team in targets just because Edelman is still there, but he's almost certainly going to lead the team in yards, probably going to get the most red zone looks. You know, he wasn't a metric all-star, but again, we're talking about a weak draft class, landing spot, draft capital. you know, a very good breakout age. He's a good athlete, good college dominator score, 6'2", 228. So he's got good size, and he has the best quarterback of all time throwing him the ball. I think it's a no-brainer here to go wide receiver. I think there's one more player until the tier drop-off, but I think this is the only receiver in that top tier as far as this draft class goes.
Yeah, especially after the NFL draft. He's in a tier by himself. Before the draft, it was him and A.J. Brown. But obviously going to Tennessee is a lot worse than going to New England.
Yeah,
I'm still taking my next guy here, just ahead of Harry, just because of the historical trend of year one production. So I'm taking David Montgomery at 104. I'm taking him ahead of Harry because I think more likely than not, at the end of the season, you'll be able to trade David Montgomery for N'Keal Harry plus something else. And we'll see how that works out, but that's generally how it goes. The running backs get opportunity more early and often, and their value spikes, whereas receivers, it's hard for their value to go up in their rookie year just based on the volume. So we'll see how it goes. Harry obviously has the potential to shoot up if he gets a ton of volume, but I still think Edelman's going to lead the team in targets and yards. So I'm going with Montgomery. Not that inspiring of a profile, you know, under the 50th percentile in some of the athleticism metrics. Speed score just barely cracks it. Agility score just barely cracks it, but nothing over the 55th percentile. So sub-athlete, that doesn't rule him out from being productive, but it doesn't help. Third-round pick, though, encouraging draft capital, especially when you consider the fact that the Bears didn't have a pick before that. So they spent their only sort of premium draft capital on a running back. So that's an encouraging sign as far as early career opportunity goes. Very productive player at Iowa State, both rushing and receiving. So we know he's got the complete profile, and he's got the size to handle it. The profile is good enough to warrant, I think, early consideration, especially in this week draft class. I am concerned about Tariq Cohen, and I think Mike Davis will get some touches this year, so we'll see. I'm kind of banking on him leading the backfield, but this one certainly has the potential to go south, and I think he's riskier than Sanders by a decent margin.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's riskier, but I also think that this is the end of the top tier. I mean, you look at running backs after this, and
yep,
maybe easily. Some people put Darrell Henderson in this tier because of the Todd Gurley news. I do not. I absolutely don't. I agree with you with everything you said about Montgomery. It'll be interesting to see how they run that offense, especially with Tariq Cohen there. If Montgomery will get the opportunity to catch the ball, regardless of Jordan Howard's lack of hands, he's still got somewhat of an opportunity to make some plays, and he failed at that. So it'll be close. See if Montgomery can stay on the field for third down as well. You mentioned who I'm taking at the 105. I'm going with another receiver, the only other one that may have overtaken N'Keal before the draft process. Ole Miss's A.J. Brown. And if you just look at metrics, you're not going to be impressed. But you have to remember that he also shared the field with D.K. Metcalf. So there was just not enough balls there to go around. But watch the film. And he's very, very polished. 6 foot, 226. So he's your, you know, typical wide receiver height and weight. Very, very good route runner. 22 years old. So just right there in his prime. And it really depends how you feel about Corey Davis. If you think he's going to maybe take his job, I think that he's going to play opposite Corey Davis for now. Probably Adam Humphries or Tajay Sharpe in the slot. Obviously, the thing that scares me the most is that we know that this is a running first team. So how much opportunity is there going to be for A.J. Brown from a below average thrower in Marcus Mariota? So again, the tier break was just before this. You could take anybody from A.J. Brown to Darrell Henderson to Kyler Murray to whoever you want here. I just think that I'm going with before the draft, I had A.J. Brown around this range, so I'm not going to change it now.
Yeah, and I think that's probably where I'd go. I think it's razor thin between him and my next guy.
Yeah, but I agree.
Even though A.J. Brown's profile isn't perfect, you have to take his in context, especially because he shared the field with Metcalf. But not only that, he was also on the field with Dawson Knox, third-round pick,
yep.
DeMarcus Lodge, undrafted, but still an NFL wide receiver. So he was on the field with two other NFL wide receivers, an NFL tight end, and everything he did with Jordan Ta'amu, who was his quarterback, a guy that's going to be nothing in the NFL if he even makes it there. I don't know what he's doing these days. I'm going to look him up right now.
Yeah.
But so really, it's just so much more impressive when you take it in context of his team and the other offensive weapons they had.
Yeah, no, and like you said, you know, looking back on it, I might take your guy, who you're going to take next. I might take him.
It's so thin.
Yeah, and I think it really comes down to do you if how much you're going to put the draft stock into it. Obviously, your guy has the opportunity, a massive amount of opportunity upside over A.J. Brown. But I think going into the process, A.J. Brown was a much more polished player.
Yeah.
Similar size and weight. I think A.J. Brown's a little bit thicker, but your guy's faster. So it really, you're nitpicking here. If you wanted to make another tier break, I would maybe put, you know, these three guys, A.J. Brown, your guy, and then my guy in a tier. But it's really close.
That's about right. I would agree.
Yeah,
so I'm getting Paris Campbell here at 106. It's so thin between him and A.J. Brown. I think the differentiator here is that we're going to see A.J. Brown produce more in year one. But as you mentioned, Campbell has extreme upside down the line. Obviously, T.Y. Hilton going over the age curve. Devin Funchess on a one-year deal. So lots of potential opportunity there for Campbell after year one. Who knows what he'll do this year. But 4.31 in the 40 for a guy that's 6 feet, 205. So he's not a small guy, but he's still blazed. 97th percentile per score as well, and that's all we got out of testing. So he looks like an extreme athlete. Decent college dominator rating, but you have to put him again in context of his offense. And at Ohio State, he was sharing the field with Terry McLaurin, NFL wide receiver. Johnny Dixon, NFL wide receiver. Mike Weber out of the backfield, NFL running back. J.K. Dobbins, future NFL running back, probably a relatively early pick if I had to guess. So lots of things that are understandably bringing down his college production in a relative market share basis. But the breakout age is okay in that context as well because, again, he was buried behind players before him because Ohio State just has talent year after year. But everything else looks pretty good. The only concern I hear a lot of is that his ADOT in college was very low. He was one of those guys catching it close to the line of scrimmage and then making yards after the catch in space. But with his athleticism, I think it's fair to say he can probably play down the field. Just because we didn't see it certainly doesn't mean he can't do it. So in the context of his offense, his athleticism, his understandable muted production early in his career, I'm willing to take a shot on a guy here with a ton of upside.
Yeah, and even if they just implore him to do, you know, the small ADOT stuff to start his career, T.Y. Hilton's going to be, you know, he's consistently a downfield target. Deion Kane is going to – I'm a big believer in Deion Kane coming off the injury, and he's impressed in camp so far. So he's going to be somebody that you look down the field for. But, yeah, it's Campbell's job. Devin Funchess isn't going to be a thing next year. So Paris Campbell, it's his job to lose. I think that's a great pick. With the 107, I am going with T.J. Hockenson. I absolutely love him. He was my tight end one by a wide margin, and I know a lot of people that his teammate, Noah Fant.
Which is wrong. There.
Yeah, if you want to play the Noah Fant athleticism card, you can, but I think that Hockenson is just a better tight end. I mean, he's going to be on the field from day one. Don't give me this bullshit about Jesse James taking his job. T.J. Hockenson, it's going to be a rare situation where I don't think he's going to need that 2 or 3 years to get used to the NFL system. He's probably one of the best blocking tight ends of this draft class. His athleticism is very solid, 4.7 in the 40, got a 92 percentile catch radius. And I know the comparison was a lot of people compared him to Gronk. You know, and you can see it. He's not blazing. I think Noah Fant, I don't have it in front of me. I think he ran like a 4.5 40. So Fant's definitely the faster. He's more the wide receiver prototype of a tight end. But Hockenson is just so balanced. 6'5", 251. The thing that scares me is Detroit and their history of tight ends is not great. And we saw that it wasn't just, you know, Eric Ebron and his athleticism or anything. It was probably Detroit and that system. And we have to still be shown that Detroit can play with a young tight end and that he could be valuable in that system. But I'm willing to take that chance. I like Hockenson here at, what are we at, 107. I just think that having an elite tight end in Dynasty makes so much of a difference, whether you've had Kelce for the last, you know, 5-6 years, or you had Gronk for his run, or now you have Kittle. It's just a position that really sets you apart, and I think Hockenson has that ability to give you that.
Yeah, I think Hockenson is the no-brainer pick here. I would agree, last guy in this tier.
Yeah.
Yeah, the concerns about Fant are certainly overstated because Hockenson was better than him in college on the same team. So I don't get it. He's above the 75th percentile across the board in athleticism, so who cares if Noah Fant is marginally better. But yeah, like you mentioned, it's because he's a complete tight end. If you want to relate it to a tight end class that people are very familiar with, he's sort of the O.J. Howard, and Noah Fant is more like the Evan Ingram. One guy is the move tight end, the guy that needs volume because he's probably not in on every down. And one guy is the guy that's always on the field, the guy that is more versatile, blocking, passing, running a whole, you know, a full set of routes. So Hockenson's the guy I want there. I mean, I prefer O.J. Howard to Evan Ingram. I prefer Hockenson to Noah Fant. Yeah, no brainer.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said.
And so the next guy we got here, not a guy I'm super high on, but at this point, you got to do it. I mean, you have to pull the trigger on DK and Metcalf.
It seemed like we were having just an almost like a stare down to see who would take him first. And yeah,
well, this is the point where you have to.
Yeah, it was at the point where if you didn't take him here, I was definitely taking him at 109.
Yep.
But you have to.
Brown, Campbell, and Hockenson, and once they're gone, I'm taking DK Metcalf. You know, there are obvious sort of concerns if you look at his profile and things that we've talked about. That his college dominator was a little bit subdued, but he was sharing the field with A.J. Brown, DeMarcus Lodge, Dawson Knox. Breakout age, pretty good, and especially in the context of an Ole Miss offense, that's impressive. The athleticism, off the charts. He slipped in the agility drill, so, you know, that still counts. You slip on the field, you're not going to get separation.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he might be better than the numbers look there. So, freak athlete, and I think the NFL was wise not to overdraft him. I think he went right about where he should, and this is the kind of guy that you'd see go early first round if we were talking about 2013, 2015. It's not long ago that Laquon Treadwell and Rashad Perriman were getting overdrafted. So I think the NFL has gotten wise. He went kind of right where he should. And, you know, he's in a prime spot to play early on. So I don't hate the landing spot, even though they're going to be very run heavy. So, yeah, and this guy with a ton of upside. He plays down the field over 20 yards per reception in college, which is bananas. So, yeah, I mean, you got to take a shot on the upside here. He's certainly a guy that could turn into an every-week starter, and that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, and you briefly, you know, touched on it, and I think you really have to talk about it just a little bit more. It's just a landing spot. And while everybody knows that the Seahawks are going to lead the league in rushing attempts again, there's no way that it's going to be nearly as dramatic as it was last year. They're going to have to throw the ball. Doug Baldwin retiring really opens the door. Tyler Lockett's going to be there. He's more or less your downfield threat. You know, I would really obviously like it if DK Metcalf was a little bit more of a polished route runner. I think he could really fit in here, but still, he's going to have the opportunity. There's no one behind him. Jerron Brown, David Moore, Amar Darbo, even the tight ends, there's no one good. Nick Van Nett, Will Disley. So the opportunity is going to be there. Seattle, I can imagine them trailing in quite a few games this year. Their team doesn't impress me, so the game script is going to be there for DK. But still, he's not someone that I own anywhere. It's not someone that I plan on owning. He's probably going before this spot in most rookie drafts just because someone is enamored by his athleticism, and I'm okay with that.
Yep.
At the 109, if you could get any more opposite of DK Metcalf, then I think this guy does it. I took Deebo Samuel, who I think is the best route runner in this draft, and I love his landing spot in San Francisco. I expect him to start right away, probably in the slot. They do three wide receiver sets. You got Dante Pettis there, who probably going to start. Marquise Goodwin is still there. Jordan Matthews, Jalen Hurd, who I like a lot too. Then obviously Kittle as a tight end. So the team it is secretly high powered. And then Tevin Coleman, Jerick McKinnon as the running backs, Matt Breida as well, Raheem Mostert. The team has a lot of weapons. And I think Deebo Samuel, and if you get points for special teams, probably going to be returning punts. Secretly good. He's going to be a slot guy. He's going to be, I can only relate him as far as fantasy goes to something like, not directly relating him, but similar to Jarvis Landry, where ADOT's not going to be there and the yards may be lacking, but the receptions certainly will be there. I think that he has a chance to lead this team in receptions, probably not yards or touchdowns, but when you're looking at this draft class at 109, I think that this is solid value for him.
Yeah, I would agree. Deebo Samuel is one of those versatile players who can do a lot, and I think he's a perfect fit for the offense he landed in. So that's certainly worth something. A lot of people are obviously high on Dante Pettis or, you know, whoever else is in that passing attack, but Deebo Samuel, I think, is sort of Dante Pettis, but better in almost every way. So my money would be on him. If you have to choose between one of the two guys, I would prefer Deebo. But certainly volume to go around in that passing game. You know, they don't really have many established weapons. Even George Kittle was just sort of a function of necessity last year. So, you know, we'll see if he commands the same type of volume this year, especially as teams sort of look back and realize, oh, this is the guy we want to key in on. So I like it. I agree.
Yeah.
And next guy I've got here is Kyler Murray. I would certainly have toyed with him at 8 or 9, but I do like Metcalf and Samuel, so I think 10 is probably the right spot for him. But he's just that good. I mean, he could be worth, you know, a mid-first-round pick. If you really need a quarterback, I would have no problem doing that. He was, you know, not quite a Baker Mayfield-level passer in college, but not that far off. Obviously, people talk about the height, but I think we can probably decide at this point that that doesn't really matter. There are a number of short quarterbacks in the NFL, and there are a number of unsuccessful ones, but they're generally guys who were drafted later. So Murray, not a guy I'm concerned about as far as any physical standpoints. College production was off the charts. And I think the biggest difference between him and Mayfield is that Kyler Murray's a guy that could legitimately run for 1,000 yards as well. So he's got the extreme Konami code ability like Lamar Jackson with the ability to pass. So we could see him finish as a high-end QB1 conceivably. Also, Arizona planning to run a ton of plays helps. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a guy that really I don't think has any significant weaknesses. He should already be in the QB1 conversation in Dynasty before he even steps on the field. And I think as soon as we see him get out there and produce, he could be up in, you know, that QB6 to 8 range in Dynasty before long at all.
Yeah, I'm not big on Kyler Murray. Obviously, with this draft class, he's going to be in the first round, regardless if you're in a Superflex or Standard or what have you. The height doesn't scare me. Short quarterbacks have been, you know, have shown that they could succeed. You look at Baker or Russell Wilson, but the frame scares me. He's just so little. And I know he's packed on quite a bit of weight since the end of the college football season. I want him to succeed. I just hope that he doesn't rely on his legs, which obviously can always lead to injuries. We see these run first quarterbacks, whether it was, if you want to go back to like a Vince Young or an RG3, and the injuries just pile up. And Kyler certainly has the weapons there. He has the coach. It's going to be a high-powered offense if he can succeed, so it's something that you want a piece of. But around here for a mock, I don't hate it. I just, it would be tough for me to pull the trigger unless I desperately needed a quarterback.
I'm comfortable taking him before this if I need to. And in Superflex, he's my 101.
Yeah, I agree with that. In Superflex, he could definitely make that. That's how weak this draft class is. But, I don't even think another quarterback would crack the first round in Superflex. Maybe.
Oh, yeah. Dwayne Haskins should easily crack the first round.
Yeah, but we have Haskins later on.
Right.
So, he would definitely crack it. But here at the 111, we talked about him. Is it Darrell? Darrell? I think it's Darrell.
Who cares?
Darrell Henderson, someone who before, Todd Gurley was fully healthy, he certainly, I don't think he'd be here at this 111, but people seem to think that the injury is going to play a big part for Todd Gurley, even though Frank Gore had literally the same exact thing, and he's doing just fine. But Henderson was a monster last year, granted, in the American Athletic Conference, but 1,900 rushing yards, 8.9 average, 22 touchdowns. So stupid video game numbers, but athletically, you know, he's there. He's 5'8", 208, so he's smaller. 4'4", 940, 22 reps on the bench. So, you know, for that frame, he's strong. He's just, he's still behind Todd Gurley. I still think Todd Gurley is, you know, a top five dynasty running back, which means that just by proxy, this guy shouldn't be able to get the opportunity. Todd Gurley is not a two-down running back. He's going to be on the field, and he's ran, I think, the third most routes out of the slot position last year. So I just don't know when Henderson is going to get on the field. I think you take him here at the 111, just kind of covering your bases. If Gurley, you know, can't play the full season, and the fact that the rest of this draft class is garbage, but I guess I'm okay with him here at 111. It's about where you see him going in a lot of ADP data anyway.
Yeah, and it's conceivable he'll jump up well higher than this if we see any more bad news about Gurley.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's a good spot for him because you never know. I mean, even if Gurley does play, it's a high-powered offense enough that Henderson can still have value without him missing time or without him having a significant injury. So, yeah, I think it's a good spot for him. And I'd probably have taken him here too because I just don't like anybody immediately following him.
Yeah.
Including the guy I took at 112, Marquise Brown. I don't really like him as a player. I mean, he was certainly pumped up by being that Oklahoma offense. Not that I think he's a bad player, but just given his profile, you know, he would certainly be an outlier. We've never seen a guy at his weight produce, you know, weekly fantasy numbers in a way that you can start him. So he'd be an outlier at 166 pounds. Maybe he'll put on some weight, but even so, he's absolutely one of the smallest receivers in the game. And if he's productive, he'd be the smallest productive receiver. But he was a first-round pick to a team without a ton of wide receivers, even a team that's going to be run-heavy. So the opportunity should present itself early on. He's got playmaking ability down the field, almost 18 yards per reception in college. So he's definitely one of those upside guys. And the only real hesitation I have with the type of play style is that I think he's a much better best ball candidate than a guy you want on your roster in a league where you have to choose a starting lineup every week. 100%. Because he's going to be one of those volatile players. I mean, there's definitely tantalizing upside, but there's just so much risk with him as far as the offense he landed in. His injury history, his size, his volatility. But it's another one of those where I think you have to take a chance on the upside because once we get to the next group of guys here, nobody, I think, has the upside he does.
Yeah, no, I agree, especially you look at that. Well, I don't know. I think you can make a case for where we had the 203, but as far as best ball goes, yeah, I think that would boost up his value a little bit. It's just he scares me. He was a little bit farther down for me. I wouldn't take him to the mid-second, but I understand, like, the points that you were making. At 201, we talked about him earlier. Again, we're not trying to build a team out of this draft class, so that's why I took Noah Fant here, even though I did also take Hockenson at 107. So Fant at 201 I think is solid value considering the comparison that we made earlier with Evan Engram. And that rookie draft, I don't remember what his final ADP was, but I got to imagine he was going around, you know, mid-first right after O.J. Howard. So solid value for Noah Fant. College production, not great, but again, he shared the field with T.J. Hockenson, 39 catches his senior year, only 7 touchdowns. But metrically, this guy, you know, is stupid. It's 99 percentile 40-yard dash, 97 speed score, 97 percentile burst, 96% agility, 98% catch radius, breakout age, 85th percentile, college dominator, 89th. So the athleticism is here. And I think the comparison that you made earlier of Noah Fant to Evan Engram is what Hockenson is to O.J. Howard, I think is perfect. I think if you want that slot receiver, you know, big Marquez Colston type, and you like that, then go for Fant. But I can see him being somebody that takes a few years to develop as that blocking tight end, someone that can't leave the field. I do expect him to be the starter in Denver, and Flacco certainly likes throwing the ball to tight ends. But if it comes down to if they're going to establish a running game with Phil Lindsay and Royce Freeman, then I think that you're looking at someone like a Jeff Huerman, who's going to be your blocking tight end, and Fant may not, you know, get on the field unless it's as a slot receiver, which I could imagine too, especially if Emmanuel Sanders is not fully healthy yet, even though he looks healthy in camp.
Yeah. No, I agree with a lot of what you said there. I like Fant. You know, we talked about him with Hockenson a lot, so I don't really have much to add. I am just concerned about the offensive situation. I don't see Denver being a potent offense in the near future here. So, you know, we'll see. They've got either Flacco or Drew Lock, who's a high volatility prospect. So that's my biggest concern. But I love him as a prospect. I love him as a player, just not nearly as much as Hockenson.
Sure.
So next guy I went with here, yeah, you kind of touched on it. You might be able to argue he has as much upside as Marquise Brown, but I'm going to try to make the case against it. But it's Damian Harris. He definitely has a ton of upside, and it's really not long ago, less than a year ago, that we were talking about him as the probable 1.01 in this class before Josh Jacobs sort of broke out in quotes. and I think it does need to be in quotes. But yeah, I mean, Harris is a very strong prospect. All around, strong player, running, receiving, and you know, obviously we can sort of forgive him for losing some touches to Josh Jacobs, a guy that went to the University of Alabama and then went to be a first-round draft pick in the NFL. So certainly forgivable. Harris is an above-average athlete, you know, not off the charts, but easily good enough to get the job done in the NFL. His yards per carry in college were good, over 6.5, which is strong in the SEC. In particular. And like I said, the target share and college dominator rating sort of lower than you'd like to see, but certainly understandable in the context of his offense. And especially given the concerns around Sony Michel with his knee, the fact that the Patriots spent a third round draft pick on Harris a year after spending a first round draft pick on Sony Michel, I think should sort of tell you a lot. And even if Michelle's healthy, I think we could certainly see Harris getting 8 to 10 touches per game, potentially more. So he might have sort of maybe flex appeal as standalone value, but he absolutely has a ton more upside than that. And the reason you draft him is in case something's wrong with Sony Michel, that he could conceivably be one of those guys getting, you know, 15, 18, 20 touches in certain games on the Patriots offense. But the reason that I don't think he has as much upside as some do is that the Patriots offense, it's, you know, it's favorable, but it probably won't be that way for long. I do expect this to be Brady's last year. I don't think Brady expects that, so we'll see how it goes. But the Patriots offense, I think everyone could probably agree, it's on the downslope. It's sort of a slow downslope so far, but that cliff's probably coming. So a year from now, we could be talking about Damian Harris, the starting running back, which would be great, but it could be Damian Harris, the starting running back, on an offense with wide receiver / quarterback Danny Etling or Brian Hoyer, or I don't even know who they would draft next year. So it could go downhill very quickly.
Yeah, and that's why I can't give up James White, but that's neither here nor there. Damian Harris is so tough to predict. And like you said, especially if you forecast that offense as far as what it can turn into. I mean, we just talked about their wide receiving core when we were talking about N'Keal Harry, and it's not a very good deep wide receiving core. So if you put any other quarterback there besides Tom Brady, I mean, what does it do to the offense as a whole? So it's certainly tough. I think this is good value for him. I could see him sneaking into the back end of the first, especially if you're running back needy, just because after this, you're really getting mucky as far as running back goes. I know we have a few more on this mock in the mid and late second, but it's tough. Who I went with at the 203 is not a running back, and it was either between him or who you took at the 204, but I went with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, wide receiver out of Stanford, one of the few receivers who played all 4 years in school. over 1,000 yards receiving his senior year with 63 catches, 14 touchdowns. So a lot of touchdowns in the pack.
I like touchdowns.
Touchdowns are always a good thing. I heard these score fantasy points. So that's always something you want to aim for. 6'2", 225, 4'5", 440. So, you know, good height, good size, good speed combination. 85th percentile college dominator rating. Now, the depth chart, you know, if you look at it quickly, you would think that it's mucky for him. But DeSean Jackson is not going to stay there much longer. Nelson Aguilar, I believe, is on his last deal last year. Alshon, I've never been high in Alshon. So for Carson, who just signed an extension to possibly get his number one or at worst number two receiver for, you know, the next 4 or 5 years on an offense that is, you know, metrically driven and always ahead of the curve. I like the upside here. He is not someone that you will be even thinking about plugging into your starting lineup this year. But as far as long term goes, which is what we're thinking about in Dynasty, I think that he gives you some solid value here in the early second.
Yeah, I love it. The only thing I want to add here is that you have to draft him knowing that you might not get production this year and he might have a value drop and you have to be willing to hold on to him.
No, 100%.
Right. Not the kind of player you can sell low on after this year. So understand that.
And if you missed out on him in the draft, if you didn't have an early second, yes, be patient and buy low at the end of this year because Nelson Aguilar is not long for Philly. Alshon is wearing his time out. DeSean Jackson's going to retire within the next year or two. And JJ is going to jump right in as that, you know, big X receiver. I would say red zone, the key red zone threat, but that'll probably still be between Ertz and Goddard. But I love the long-term value that JJ can give us here, especially at, 203. So solid value.
Yep. I think I might have him a couple slots after this because I do want my next guy and probably your next guy both just over him. But
yeah,
all in the same tier.
Like I said, it was between him and your guy right here. But other than that, I mean,
maybe. Yeah, they're all in the same tier.
Yeah, maybe Mecole Hardman before the Tyreek news. But yeah, definitely these two are back to back as far as my rankings go.
Yeah, we're splitting hairs here. So my guy's Andy Isabella. He's. Despite his size, which, you know, I just kind of railed on Marquise Brown for, you know, Andy Isabella, not a big guy either. He's 5'9", 188. So, you know, he's a good 20 pounds heavier, but at the same time, still not a big guy. But athletic across the board, he blazed 4.31 in the 40, above the 50th percentile in burst and agility. And even at his size, almost the 50th percentile in catch radius, which is very impressive. But he just absolutely shredded in college. He went to UMass, so a lot of people are going to knock him for that. Not a big-time program, but accounted for over half of their passing production, which is bonkers. Almost 17 yards per reception, so he's getting down the field as well. And you know, I sort of see him playing that role in Arizona as a nice complement to Larry Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk. Isabella can be that downfield guy. Broke out very young, which you got to do if you play at a small program like Massachusetts. So, yeah, I mean, he just sort of checks all the boxes he can, given the context of the college he went to. You couldn't really have asked for more. And the only times he played big-name programs, he shredded them. You know, he went over 200 yards in a game against Georgia, over 100 or 150 or I can't remember exactly, against Ole Miss, I think it was, or Mississippi State or something. But he played two SEC schools and just destroyed them both. And nothing makes me happier than the fact that he went out over 200 yards against Georgia and Riley Ridley went for like 20 yards against Massachusetts. Just so fitting.
Had to throw in a Ridley brothers.
Of course,
dig
of course. Well,
in today's episode. Four.
Low on Calvin and significantly lower on Riley. So I had to get him in there. But yeah, I mean, yeah. Isabella showed that he can beat good competition, even on the context of a subpar team. So really, I think few things not to like, and he does have a ton of upside here. You could probably also argue almost as much as Marquise Brown, but obviously Brown, I think, is guaranteed more early opportunity. So we'll see. I'd love to see Isabella on the field day one.
Yeah, and like I said, Isabella was right there for me. So I like your argument. I think he will be on the field day one. And if he's not, the offense that he's in, he'll get the opportunity. This is where it got really, really tough for me in our draft. The teardrop from here is just
one more guy and it's yours right here, then my teardrop.
Yeah, okay. So that's fair. But if we ended the episode here, I don't think anybody would really complain. But I did take Justice Hill here at the 205. Again, it's one of those situations where if you look at the depth chart, you'll think, well, why? They just signed Mark Ingram. And sure, they signed Mark Ingram. I think it was a 3-year, $15 million deal. Potential out after next year. So I fully imagine Baltimore getting out from that contract just to save the $5 million. Yeah, 2021. Ingram's 29 years old. Justice Hill, again, he's one of those people that we may have looked at as first round running back before last year. His freshman and sophomore year, really solid production, over 1,000 yards both those years, 15 touchdowns his sophomore year. His junior year, he missed 3 games, didn't eclipse 1,000 yards, didn't even get the double-digit touchdowns, only had more than 13 catches once, and that was in his breakout sophomore year campaign. So definitely a workhorse candidate in 2017. But metrically, nothing really jumps off the page. Burst score, 95th percentile, 4.40, which is very much the opposite of Mark Ingram. So you could make the case that maybe they have that thunder and lightning kind of dual backfield. But again, with Lamar Jackson there, Lamar's going to steal red zone opportunity. Ingram's going to steal the goal line down. So it's just right now, I think that the opportunity is going to be tough for Justice Hill to kind of make a niche for himself. It could be something similar to what we were talking about with JJ or Siggy Whiteside, where you just got to be patient. And for running backs, that can be tough. But I think that he's one of those candidates. I do not think that the rest of that depth chart is really threatening. We have Gus Edwards and Kenneth Dixon. So there's really nobody else there. It's just you with this offense, it's so scary because you touched on it with Marquise Brown. I don't know how often teams are going to be stacked in the box. I mean, if you see 8 more in the box all the time, then you can't imagine that the running game is going to be effective. I don't care who you have. So, I am taking Justice Hill here. He's there as far as an athlete goes. It's tough.
Yeah, he's probably a guy I would take here. Another one, just like JJ or Saquon Whiteside there. You want to be patient. Don't sell low if you're drafting him. And I don't want my next guy, but at this point, he's another one like sort of that cap. You got to take him. Devin Singletary. Just an absolute dud as far as his profile goes. He's not big enough. He's not fast enough. He's not agile enough. He's not strong enough. And on the plus side, he was very productive in college. Again, at Florida Atlantic, which is fine. You know, you got to be productive if you go there. And he was active in the passing game, although it did drop off over his career there, not as much later in his career. So he's going to be, you know, one of the ultimate tests of film versus metrics this year. Where the film guys love him. He runs hard. He runs to contact. He bowled over defenders in the whatever conference. But I don't think it's going to work in the NFL. I don't think a guy this size is going to be able to run with power against NFL defenders. So I'm really low on Devin Singletary. But at this point, you got to invest in a running back who was drafted to a thin depth chart in the third round. He's going to get opportunity. And if he gets opportunity, that means he's going to get yards and maybe touchdowns. So he'll have some value, and you know he's the one kind of guy here that I'm just going to hope he does something so I can trade him.
Yeah, he would be farther down on my list. I'd probably have our next 3 guys above him, but I understand the argument. And again, we're just it's a shit pile at this point as far as the players. But at 207, I'm taking Mecole Hardman. And if your rookie draft was before this week, then I guarantee Mecole Hardman was gone by 207 just because he thought he was going to be the Tyreek Hill replacement. And I think that's why Kansas City drafted him. You look at him, as far as metrics go, and 4.33 40, 5.10 187. So you're looking at somebody who is just, you know, very, very similar to Tyreek, a low catch radius and a low college dominator. Grant, he played at Georgia, so Georgia is, you know, was known for their running game, but never eclipsed more than 550 yards receiving or more than 35 catches in a year. So if you were just to take this guy and put him on the Titans or the Ravens, he would not crack the top two rounds. But the fact that everybody was grooming him to be Tyreek's replacement, and he's in an Andy Reid offense, and Patrick Mahomes can throw it 1,000 yards, and Mecole Hardman just go and get it. Yeah, I can see the argument. There's not a crowded depth chart there. It's Tyreek, it's Sammy Watkins, and it's DeMarcus Robinson and Byron Pringle. So Mecole Hardman can make a name for himself. I think he may just be too similar to Tyreek, and I'm not sure where he fits. But he's someone that if Tyreek Hill fucks up again, you know, Hardman's going to be the guy to own there. So at this point, again, this draft class is so bad that he's solid value here. So I would take him.
Yeah, I saw him going in the first round when Tyreek was theoretically going to get suspended. So it's good value, as much as I don't really like him that much as a player. He's another one of those guys that could produce. And then you could look to trade him. So I don't mind the pick at all. I think I like him over my next guy. So I think it's a good spot. My next guy here is Sakeem Butler. And this is at the 208. So we're back out of the second round. So I'm taking Sakeem Butler here. A lot of the reasons I talked about with Andy Isabella, you like where he landed. There's really not a similar receiver to Butler on the roster. So even though he was drafted after Isabella, and they already have an established Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald. If something happens to any of those guys, it's conceivable Butler could also get on the field early, just because he's got a unique skill set. And at 6'5", 227, he's one of those sort of old school, throw it up and go get it, X receivers. And he's pretty fast. I mean, he ran under a 4.5, which is really, really good for his size. That's a 97th percentile speed score. And actually in college, he went for 22 yards per reception. So as much as I think Andy Isabella will be that downfield guy, Hakeem Butler could be one of those, you're big and tall, go run down the field and we'll throw it up and then you go get it. And that could lead to some volatility, but at the same time, he does have a pretty good ceiling, especially relative to some of the players in this area. So even though I'm not super high on him because it took him forever to break out at Iowa State, which it should have, he was very good in his last season. The film guys love him, so presumably he's doing something right. And his metrics aren't really that bad otherwise. It's concerning that he went to Iowa State and redshirted because I guess he wasn't good enough right off the bat to start at Iowa State, which is not a good endorsement, but there's still upside here. It's undeniable, and he's another one of those guys I'm sort of holding my nose and taking because I know there's potential.
Yeah, me and you kind of disagreed as far as Hakeem Butler goes. You know, this is going back to before the draft process and everything. I also think that this might just contribute to how I'm more of a film guy and you're more of a metric guy as well. So, but I do like Hakeem Butler. I think you touched on a lot of good things there as far as his speed. For his height, you know, a lot of people make that lazy comparison. Oh, it's Plaxico Burress. No, it's fucking not. Plaxico Burress was slow and had one thing that he had to do. Hakeem Butler, you know, can run routes kind of, but he has the speed where he can be a poor man's X receiver. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that offense and that wide receiving core. Again, Hakeem Butler is not somebody that I expect to get on the field this year. I think that you have Fitz, you have Christian Kirk, and you probably have Andy Isabella in the slot.
Hope so.
Unless something happens, and you're still looking at Chad Williams possibly before Hakeem Butler. But I think Butler, a few years down the line, especially in this Cliff Kingsbury offense with Kyler Murray, this could be somebody that, you know, gets utilized as far as a red zone option goes. Is he somebody that you're going to be plugging in as a wide receiver one or two? Probably not, but he might be a wide receiver three or a slot or a flex option as far as touchdown upside. So I do like him. I like his size and speed. So I like Hakeem Butler here. I think it's really good value. At the 209, I took the second quarterback in this little mock. I took Dwayne Haskins, who I thought was the best pure passer in this draft class. And, you know, the college production at Ohio State. What did I just say? Did I just combine Iowa and Ohio? Ohio State, just in his sophomore year, was very good. Bananas numbers, 70 completion percentage, nearly 5,000 yards, 50 touchdowns, just 8 interceptions. Going to a shitty, shitty team. May start this year, may be behind Case Keenum. I hope that he sits behind Case Keenum. The wide receiving core, you have Paul Richardson, Josh Doctson. You touched on Terry McLaurin earlier. Kelvin Harmon is there, who we'll talk about in a little bit, Trey Quinn. But I do like Dwayne Haskins as a talent standpoint. Again, best pure passer as far as I'm concerned.
Yep, agreed.
92% QBR, 6'3", 231. So, you know, big boy, looks like a quarterback. He's a lot of people make the comparison to Jameis Winston. I'm down with that. If you could just build up an offense around him, I think that he could be solid. But, again, super flex, you know, back end of the first round. Standard, I'm fine taking him here and then just waiting.
Yeah, I think this is a good spot to take him in single QB. I agree with pretty much everything you said. And even though Washington's depth chart is bad, I think we can all agree, at least they don't have a ton of the same type of guys. They've got the alpha X receiver. They've got the field stretcher. They've got the slot receiver. So, I mean, they have a complete package that could turn out to be you know, one of those things where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So Haskins might not have a terrible situation. It's probably still below average, but it might not be as bad as everyone thinks. So I'm pretty high on him too. And I would have maybe considered my guy here over him, but it's close. I think they're both right in the same area. So I'm taking Irv Smith at the 2010.
A long podcast. We're starting to talk over each other. It's getting weird.
Yep. The 2-1-0 here, Irv Smith. Yeah, the Vikings just extended Kyle Rudolph, which is, I think, the biggest knock on him. But it's a pretty fake extension. The contract, the extension here is 4 years, $36 million. But less than $10 million of it is guaranteed. And the debt cap after this year, it's essentially $6 million, $4, $3, $1.5 million, starting in 2020. So
very team-friendly.
It's not much, and it goes down every year. So I think more likely than not, we'll see Rudolph get cut before the end of the contract. And it could conceivably happen as soon as next year. So there wouldn't be too much of a problem for the team. But it's just rare that you see a contract this big where a guy is guaranteed so little out of it. So, yeah, like you said, very team-friendly. Horrible contract if you're Kyle Rudolph. His agent should probably be fired. But it's good for Irv Smith because it's possible that as soon as next year, and if not probably before too long, Irv Smith will be the number one tight end on the depth chart. And, you know, he's a guy that went in the second round out of Alabama. So good draft capital, played at a strong school. And, you know, his resume is not amazing. 14% college dominator, which is below average, but again, in the context of Alabama, who has a ton of other NFL caliber players, it's understandable. Ran a 4.63 at his size. That's not bad. It gives him over a 70th percentile speed score. Not a superb athlete otherwise, but probably good enough. And the thing I'd really like to see, and I think the best thing on his profile here, is that over 16 yards per reception in college. So he's not just one of those tight ends that's going to block and then go out for dump offs and be that security blanket over the middle of the field like Jason Witten, just racking up 5, 6, 7, 8 yard catches. Irv Smith's going to run down the field. He's athletic enough and fast enough to get down, you know, into the second level and make some deep catches. So I think his upside is, you know, more tantalizing than some are giving him credit for. The situation is not as bad as some are making it out to be. And so that sort of confluence of factors means I think you're getting him at a pretty good value. And he's another one of those guys you're going to have to sit on for a year, maybe 2 years. So just know that and definitely put him on the buy low radar if you don't draft him.
Yeah, I like him here. However, I think it's close between him and Jay Sternberger as far as my tight end three of this draft class goes. I really like Jay Sternberger. Obviously, I like the landing spot a lot more in Green Bay, but he did not make the first two rounds of this mock, so we're not going to talk about him. So my last pick at the 211 is Kelvin Harmon, not somebody that I'm probably going to take anywhere. And before the combine, he would have definitely been before this draft slot. Solid production at NC State, junior year, 81 catches for 1,200 yards, 7 touchdowns. Very good route runner, but completely fell on his face at the combine. 4.60, 40-yard dash at 6'2", 221, so no excuse for that. 29th percentile catch radius, 22nd percentile agility, and 15th percentile burst. The only thing with this is, and we just talked about it, excuse me, with Dwayne Haskins is, you know, it's in the realm of possibilities that Kelvin Harmon's a starter in Washington this year. You know, you have Josh Doctson, who has yet to prove anything or stay healthy. Terry McLaurin, who might be a starter. It's probably between those two. It's probably between Terry McLaurin and Kelvin Harmon as far as who's starting opposite Doctson, because you got to imagine Paul Richardson's probably going to be in the slot. It's not an offense that I really want to touch. If you really want to dive into it, you could say, oh, well, they're bad. They're going to have game script. They're going to throw the ball a lot. They're going to get opportunity. Maybe. But if you're taking Kelvin Harmon with that attitude, then I'm selling him after this year, as soon as he finishes with a decent year. He's not somebody that I want to hold on to long term. He's not somebody that impresses me. And typically, I'm all for the wide receiver as far as the young wide receiver, young quarterback pairing. I mean, we talked about that with Hakeem Butler and with Andy Isabella and with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside and Carson Wentz. I love getting that wide receiver that can grow with a young quarterback. But for this instance, Kelvin Harmon just doesn't really do it for me. The only reason why I'm taking him here is just because of value and how he looked before the combine, before falling to the sixth round of the draft.
Yep, I agree. And he's probably the guy I'd go with here. I think he's got the clearest path out of the rookies to sort of a significant and reliable role. McLaurin might be in there as a volatile field stretcher, so out of the two, I prefer Harmon as well. And the guy I'm taking here at the 212, last pick of our mock here, is Raquel Armstead. And it's really simple. He's a strong profile. He wasn't drafted early, but he's behind Leonard Fournette on a depth chart that doesn't have much else, and Leonard Fournette gets hurt all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly possible that he gets several starts this year, if not more, and who knows what happens with Leonard Fournette long term. But Armstead's a guy that ran under a 4.5 at 5'11", 220, so he's got the bell cow size. He was over 30% dominator rating in college, so accounted for a ton of his team's offense. Wasn't quite as active in the passing game as I'd like, but really he did almost everything you could ask at Temple.
Waiting for it.
Yep, at Temple.
My alma mater. Yes.
That's right.
Yes. Say it again.
Temple.
Yeah, all right.
Okay. Temple University.
Go on, as you were.
Yeah, I mean, so you can't really do too much more than what he did there to prove himself worthy. But bell cow size, strong profile, good enough athlete, and could certainly well be starting games as soon as this year, because we certainly know how healthy Leonard Fournette has been in his career. So, yeah, it's really that simple.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, as someone who went to the Temple games and saw this, obviously I have a biases, but he really was the entire offense for Temple. And I am a lot lower on Leonard Fournette than almost everybody. I don't think he's long for the NFL. I think that he will never, ever play a 16-game season. And when he's on the field, I don't think he's all that talented. So I'm biased towards Raquel Armstead. I think he's going to be solid. If anything, he could fill in for when Fournette is hurt, like you said, kind of like how T.J. Yeldon had those bursts of value over the last 2 years. But I like him here to finish the second round. And typically, you don't see him going this early, even though I certainly think he deserves it.
Yeah, this is one of those examples where you could take a lot of other players in this range. Sure. You know, you could take Miles Boykin. You could take Jay Sternberger. Mm-hmm. But really, my primary concern, especially once you get to the – late second. Normally, most years, it's like the third round. But third round and beyond, I'd rather take a high upside handcuff than take a guy that might become like a flex play.
100%.
You know, I'm only considering players who have legitimate weekly RB1, WR1 potential. And certainly possible that if Leonard Fournette gets hurt, I could be starting Reichwell Armstead and getting top 12 production in a given week. So even if I only get two or three games like that, that's way more valuable than having a guy that turns into a Theo Riddick on your bench.
Yeah, no, I agree. And when it comes down to it, you know, if Fournette continues to get hurt and if Todd Gurley stays healthy, then the people who drafted Reichwell Armstead, you know, in the early third rounds look a lot smarter than the people who drafted Darrell Henderson at 107. That's going to wrap up the mock. I think that's going to wrap up the show. The show went pretty long. We were going to touch on Scott Fishbowl, but we'll do that next week. Is your draft still going?
No.
Is it finally over?
No, I think they're all done by now. But last year I was in the slowest of all the Scott Fishbowl drafts, and this year I think we were fifth slowest.
Oh, that's terrible. But
I prefer it that way because
there's
just no pressure.
Yeah, it's a fun process. I enjoy it. I'm actually wearing my Sega Genesis SFB9 shirt right now. We'll talk about that next week. I want to talk about my team. I'm sure you want to talk about your team. We'll see where any commonalities that we have or anything that we disagree on. But it was fun to get back to it. I'm excited to start recording on a weekly basis. We're going to try to record either every Wednesday or Friday, I think we said. And, you know, try and be consistent with it leading up to the season. We'll have more camp notes. I'm sure we'll have more injuries. As always, if you want to reach out to us on Twitter, either at Leopold NFL or at the Dynasty Owl, if you want us to talk about anything specifically, if you want to be a guest, let us know. We'll have you on. Other than that, Mark, it was fun talking to you again. I'm glad we got to do it. And I'll see you next week. All right, buddy?
Welcome back.
Yeah, it's good to be back.